All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
Hey, how you doing, everyone? And welcome to another beautiful Behind the Wheel podcast. Well, Wheel Wednesday Behind the Wheel podcast featuring myself, Luis, and Scott from Koenig, where, you know,
we're already off to a wonderful start. I can feel it.
Absolutely.
Man.
You like that voice
so,
that I just did?
So interesting.
Absolutely.
I don't know that we've ever started in recent history on time, but yet we started perfectly on time today.
Right.
So anyhow, with that said, Good Wheel Wednesday happening right now. I don't know. What was that cue?
I had to move up my mic because I sound like I'm far away.
You know? A lot of rainbow lights going on back here. Woo, super hot. Woo.
Oh, yeah.
You know what's super hot? That white hexaform.
By the way, if you're here, yeah, they are available now and you can get them.
But and they don't come with that red cap.
Yes, that's actually a special thing that we'll be having out coming out soon. Did that make sense, what I just said?
No.
I don't know. But
that doesn't... You'll check on our website at some point. We're going to offer red logos and offer the ability to buy a secondary silver cap.
Yeah.
So today's podcast is interesting, and it's interesting for a lot of different reasons. We have James Houghton with us today. If you know James Houghton, you know that he is a master of time attack, a master of wheel-to-wheel racing.
Ooh.
I'm only saying this because most likely he's already with us and listening to what I'm saying.
He is.
So I want to make sure that I talk him up as much as I can. Up there in Canada, he does some pretty crazy things, and he's
record-breaking. Yeah. Record-breaking driving.
And that's real.
So
yeah,
that is the truth.
So what we wanted to do was, if you have seen what has been going on lately, obviously, EV stuff and EPA stuff has been overwhelming.
I'm excited to talk about this.
Okay, but not the EPA part. We're not excited about that.
Oh, no. Right. I meant to say the EV stuff, yes.
We're not excited about EPA. However, what's happening here is there is a crushing force on the enforcement of internal combustion engines or cars with internal combustion engines that have been modified. And the idea that they could enforce a rule that's been on the books for decades, which is that you can't modify a vehicle at all when it comes down to vehicles that have emissions devices.
Yeah.
So that really kind of throws some worms into the automotive aftermarket that we experience, into the motorsport realm. What is interesting is there's companies that are rushing to market, and I shouldn't say rushing because they've probably been working on it for probably like 8-10 years, but that being able to keep the lifestyle, keep what's been important to us, but make it so that it complies, and the way to comply is to make it electric, which is off-putting for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason that you should hang in for this podcast, because AEM... good friends of ours,
yep.
Lawson, he's
yep.
been on the
yep.
podcast plenty.
Yep.
But their president and CEO, Kirk, he gave this great talk, which is on the internet. Please go check it out.
Yep.
Where he explains the whole process here. They have been pioneering and putting this into real life now, and they have just really turned it on. And I want to talk to James about that. So we'll let's get James in here.
Yep, straight from the RV. Welcome, James Houghton.
He's in the RV.
Yeah.
Hi, guys.
Oh, man, you look good in the RV, man.
It's so, the only place I could find that would be quiet.
Did you, like, drive it to work and just, like, hop in?
No, I didn't even actually plan that it was going to be here today, but we were getting an alignment done on it, and I brought it here afterwards, and I was like, okay, well, this will be a quiet spot anyways.
Right. So, people can go look you up if they're not familiar
yeah.
with your racing or your kind of career, right? But serious racer you are, and I think your opinion here is completely deserving. Look, we we have seen what the United States, and I'm referencing U.S. because you're obviously in Canada, but the U.S. EPA has had a rule on the books for ever and ever that essentially says any vehicle or any motor vehicle that has emissions devices can't be altered. They can't be modified. And that's part of this whole SEMA push for the RPM Act. And it was basically a way of writing in language that would exclude vehicles that had been converted into race vehicles. And that has yet to really gain enough traction to be able to get passed. Now, there's a lot of ways to say traction. I think everybody I know is in support of it. It's been signed millions of times. It's not that it's not unsupported, but the EPA and a political institution will do a really good job about keeping it from getting through. And because of that, there is this risk that, in theory, track cars or existing internal combustion engine cars that we know of and in track use could, in theory, in one day, and hopefully it's just a far-off thought, go away.
It's very possible. I mean, in some ways, in some respects, I think it depends. There's cars, you know, I'm doing more GLTC wheel-to-wheel racing than I am time attacking these days, but I'm still very involved with time attack, and we're taking the Evo out this weekend, and that'll be fun. But for example, in a GLTC respect, there's lots of new cars that are available to be, you know, that are kind of at that kind of power to weight that they're looking that a person would be looking for at a race in GLTC. Yeah. A brand new Toyota 86 is like cookie cutter right off the shelf, like stock engine, stock everything. So in some ways, yes. In other ways, you know, you could theoretically put suspension and brakes and tires and a roll cage in one of those cars and run it with all the factory emissions equipment on it as well.
That's fair.
But I do think that it would definitely have a, you know, a very negative impact on a lot of the motorsports industry. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, how far does not being able to modify a vehicle with emissions go, right? Like, we obviously know, obviously we're going to exclude the suspension, the supporting modifications that will have to do with, you know, increasing the handling or performance of a vehicle in that respect. But, you know, there is this other thing, like, you know, there's a lot of little tweaks you do to drivetrain or to, you know, different parts of the power plant that could potentially go away. And that could change the game for a lot of different classes, right? And I guess if it's a ballpark restriction, you could make the argument that, well, everybody would be suffering the same thing, so you would just change the playing field to something that's less aggressive or something that's, well, boring. But, you know,
I have a question for you, and I don't know I'm curious about this, because the EPA, so is that like the law right now technically that says you are not supposed to change any of that for any race car?
I believe that it's not for any race car, it's for any vehicle, and the problem
any
is
street car turned race car.
Yeah, any street car at all, you know, I believe the rule is written very explicitly, and I feel more comfortable saying it again, because I just listened to this talk that I had mentioned before, that Kirk, the president of, and CEO of AEM, had given, where he basically says exactly that. He's like, you know, this rule that hasn't been enforced, could essentially be enforced because there's no required to change the law. So yes, it's an existing, on the books thing.
I'm so curious about it. You know, if they, I know that the EPA has come down on some of the bigger tuners and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'm so curious, when there's so many tuners out there still that are seemingly unaffected by this at all, is it something that, you know, got written by someone that really doesn't understand the law? And is it something that are they ever planning on enforcing? I'm not sure. I'm just, you know, theorizing a little bit on that. Like, did someone write that really didn't know what it meant?
Yeah. Well, so
and
I think
other people, the enforcers, you know, read that and said, you know, well, we're not going to shut down the entire motorsports industry in the United States. How many billion dollars would that cost the, you know, the GDP per year?
Yeah. So I listen, all your points are valid. I'm going to do my best to try to comment on this because I don't think any answer I give would be super concrete. Yeah. But I'm going to try my best to comment on this quickly without getting too political. And I think I'm just going to try to stay as flat as I can here. So I think what happens is you have two opposing political parties, and one of them seems to be very on the side of not really concerned with or traditionally hasn't been as strict when it comes down to environmental protection and the EPA in itself. And then you have another party that has been always very concerned with the environmental protection and different things like that. Now, my personal opinion on this whole fact is that they're focusing on an area that would net and marginally not change anything emissions-wise as far as the atmospheric, you know, and the earth and the climate changing crap at all. I think that they're completely spending time in the wrong segment, worried about the wrong things. Let's be honest. The older vehicles get, the more they get removed from the road, period. Yeah. That's number one. Number two, never before have we been in a situation where vehicles could essentially be tuned to increase horsepower, but make better fuel economy and have less emissions than they ever have before, because the tuning technology and the software is that good, right? You take a 90 Civic, put in a K-swap, even if you didn't hypothetically put every single thing and kept it a race car, you didn't put, you know, catalytic converters or whatever it meant back in, by the time you get done tuning that car, I would argue that that car is probably more efficient than when that thing rolled off the line, you know, back in the 90s, hypothetically. Now, there's this other piece, which is that we now have emissions devices like high flow catalytic converters that really do the job and still allow to be high flow. So in theory, you use the tuning software that has, you know, an incredible advance in technology to be able to control certain things. You set a set of guidelines for every tuner that has to follow, where they have to be able to maintain certain emission standards. Maybe it's the emission standards of when the car rolled off the line. And you open it up to using some of these, you know, approved emissions devices like high flow catalytic converters. And I think you can achieve or improve the existing vehicle's emission standards in an aftermarket realm, period. And I feel like that's really the direction they should be going. Now, let's go the other way, which is that I think what's happening here is you have, we're in the midst of having a more liberal administration. Their points of their party are to ensure more environmental protection. That's where they stand. I think that they're looking at this as a whole issue, not just singling out race cars, but it is, you know, modified vehicles is obviously part of it. And I think that the politicians not only don't care to look at the actual facts, but the EPA themselves doesn't really have any facts. I think they're using statistics and they're not looking at, like, they're, what I'm saying is their energy is not going to be spent in trying to come up with ways to remedy a situation and appease. Their situation is going to be just to let's just stop this altogether and move forward with these big, great electric vehicles. Hmm. That's my opinion on the subject. So I don't think it's really about the rule was probably always written by the EPA, you know, not always, but like at some point it was enacted when probably emissions became more vital. I'd imagine it was probably somewhere in the 70s or 80s where there was that big gas crisis and that started to heat up. But regardless, I think it's just a matter of now you have these people there that are like, you know, they're so far removed from the automotive industry. They just are more concerned. They feel that this is a major threat, which I think if you were to look at buses and cow farts, I think there probably is a higher percentage of that stuff that does damage to the environment before you'd ever get to some of these modified vehicles.
I just wish people could be, I just wish people in power could be a little bit more middle of the road. Like, for example, there could be some exemptions for top fuel drag cars and stuff like that, for example. Or
right, because they
like
run for like in, 3 seconds.
Yeah, but in the majority of the things, every car has to have a catalytic converter.
Right. All right.
What would be wrong with that?
Nothing.
That's fine. Every car that's lapping, time attack, wheel-to-wheel racing, whatever, every car has to have a catalytic converter, and it has to meet these things. Yes, there will be still some that are running too rich and still polluting more than others, but the majority of it, if you follow a car on the street that has no cat and you follow a car on the street that has a cat, usually the car that has no cat is stinkier than the one that has a cat. So just blanket it. Unless you have, this event has a special exemption, every car has a cat.
Yep.
I don't see the problem with it.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I also think that, you know, I think the EPA, and this is where I start to get, you know, I have access to some of the greatest tuners in the country to have conversations with in a friendly sense. And without any, like, I have no political agenda. Like, I just like cars, right? So my whole thing is that I know what's capable out of these machines, and I also know what's capable out of the tuning software that we have available today. This is not your old, you know, increase fuel, decrease fuel piggyback controller that we had a million years ago. These are sophisticated devices that can control virtually every timing, every fuel table, every conditional table that's needed within within an ECU to control every parameter of the vehicle. And I think that if you were to set some standards that even race cars had to comply with, or modified vehicles, if they had to follow the same emissions pathway as even the car they have coming off the showroom, I think that still could be done and these cars can make more power. Look at these GTRs. Look at, you know, some of these Demons and Hellcats and all this. These cars make crazy power, but yet they pass emissions just fine. They make the EPA standards and they come out of the showroom. So don't tell me it can't be done. It's being done.
I agree.
Yeah. So, but with all this said.
Okay.
We made it.
Yeah.
With all this said. Have you seen some of the stuff that AEM has been starting to push out more and more?
I have. And I think that the potential for electric time attack cars is unbelievable, first of all, straight off the top.
Right, right.
Whether it be a modified, swapped electric, you know, something that was gas and has gone electric, some of the Teslas that, you know, for example, Mountain Pass Performance are doing, Sasha and Nice. I think that it's shocking how fast some of these cars can be with the weight of the cars. Yeah. They're so heavy. And you wouldn't even know. They handle and they accelerate and they brake like the cars are 1,000 pounds lighter than they are. And they get it done on track. And I have a hard time arguing against it. I'm kind of a different guy when it comes to cars. I appreciate a car that looks good, and I appreciate a car that sounds good. But my main thing is not the smell of race fuel in the morning. My main thing is the competition.
Yeah.
So if you told me that, you know, electric's going to be more mainstream in 2024, it's going to be much easier to take my TSX, swap it to electric, and run it in GLTC, you know, yeah, I'd be a bit sad for a little bit. And then I'd say, well, how are we going to make this work? Because if they're all going to be electric, that'll be an interesting new challenge. And, you know,
yeah,
you don't have to worry about swelling gas cans in the trailer when we're towing.
Right.
So,
no, it's, you know, it's a great point. And what's interesting is that this is the first time I have been saying this for a few years now. Every time I get asked, whether it be on one of the lives we do or in the podcast, or we bring up any of these conversations where people say to me, hey, like, what are you like, how do you think about EVs? Or we put up something with an EV, you know, like a couple years ago when Turnkey Motorsports and Travis Reeder linked to be one of the first electric drift cars in Formula Drift. And we were on that car. People are like, you know, it's not, you know, it sucks. These things are dismal. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I've always continued to say, hey, listen, this is coming whether you like it or not. Like, this is something that you're not going to outrun. You may get there for a little bit, but at the end of the day, this is the A track. This is the CD. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to come to an end. You know, not that you maybe can't use it for a while, but it's going to stop. And what people have to do is they have to embrace the fact and keep an open mind that there will be this path forward, and see how tuning and modifying vehicles will not stop because electric comes in. And I know people get super freaked out like that because they look and they say, oh, well, it's a Tesla, so what are you going to do to it, you know? But AEM what really came out with some really good visuals, and I think this is the first time that a company that has taken a hypothetical has put something into play and shown a very, very clear pathway forward for automotive, motorsport, and enthusiasts to be able to continue to modify and tune cars using a platform that could soon be predominant. You know?
Absolutely.
It's crazy. I mean, for those that don't know, you should go to AEM's channel and you should watch it. It's essentially what they're basically saying is they broke down this whole video and they said, hey, here's how electric cars work. And and after they explained how electric cars work, which is very interesting, there's a high circuit, there's a low circuit. The low circuit's obviously there to be your 12-volt stuff so that you can still run radios and all your accessories in the car, dash lights, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's the high voltage, which essentially is going to be the batteries that are going to be at these, you know, super crazy high volts that are going to essentially go through motor inverters and then power these electric motors, and then everything's gotta spill back from the batteries into like a charging system, which essentially would do the same thing that your alternator does to replenish power to the low volt system. Mm-hmm. Now what AEM's done, and I think it's pretty monumental, and I suspect that there's going to be a lot of companies like the Haltechs and, you know, these other companies, they're going to follow suit if they're not already right there. Because let's be honest, no one in that segment has been closing their eyes and saying this is not going to happen. And what AEM did was they released all these connections to allow CAN buses to be connected to electric motors. So essentially, you could take your Mustang right now. You can put an electric motor into it. You could put batteries into it. And with AEM's controllers and different modules, you could basically swap the engine and stuff out, figure out a way to link your drivetrain together. I'm sure that there's going to be other companies that are going to be really good with that. And then all of a sudden, you're going to be able to allow your car to still have all the accessories it ever had. Obviously, there's going to be companies that are going to have to link things like air conditioning if you're going to keep your existing vehicle. But bottom line is they're creating a pathway forward where they're going to have a battery management system that's able to tune the car and the power and how much power and voltage and all that stuff gets used to be able to control the power to the motors, mm-hmm. and still give you these controllers so you can make your car, your existing vehicle, work with an electric motor. And what I think is just so crazy about this is that it allows people like you and me that if this EPA law was enacted and then enforced, that yes, it's sad, it's horrible, we're gonna be really pissed off, there's gonna be a lot of engines everywhere, but I can take my 350Z if I had to and I wanted to keep it and I wanted to drive it, and I can update to an electric platform, and I can still keep my car. I can still run an Integra. I can still run, you know, a DC5 platform in motorsports, with the exception, which means I can keep my suspension, all my stuff that I've worked hard to build, my aero, all that stuff. But I can figure out how to repower the car that's and still keep everything.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. Like, because let's say that it does go that route. Eventually, it gets to the point where, well, and I guess it goes with time. They're going to develop different ways and different aftermarket parts for EV in general to kind of add power and all that. Because then, let's say you do put it to that platform, then that's what exists as far as like power, right? Like the whole like new electric engine.
Well, it's not an engine. It's a motor.
Yes, a motor.
I know that seems. Like a weird place for me to draw a line, but like, but like they're not. They're not engines, and you know it's a motor. James, do you think, like, can you see other people in some of your, like, you know, the racing that you guys do being excited for a change like this?
I don't know. I think it's hard to see the excitement. I think it's hard to see.
You froze. That's why we're laughing. Sorry.
Your screen froze. Yeah, on your mugshot. And so.
Oh, he'll be back.
Wait, did this happen before? Wait, did we leave or did he leave?
No, I think he. There he is.
Oh, we're back.
Is that me or you?
I don't know.
No, this has happened before.
It said you guys left the call.
Oh.
Yeah. We left.
Okay.
We're back.
We're back. What I was going to say is that I think that at this stage, it's hard to be excited because at this stage, there's still so much effort to convert a gasoline powered vehicle into an electric powered vehicle.
Right.
You know, there's so few people doing it, so few people doing it really well. So it's hard to be excited. You know, Scott, if I said, would you be excited to be the president of the United States? Even if 20 years from now, you were going to be the president of the United States. If you were, you can't comprehend that if you could be excited or not right now, because there's too many things in the way to allow you to understand that excitement.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's where we're at right now. Too expensive. Don't know how to do it. Don't know how to wire it. Don't know how to mount it. Don't know how to get it, you know, made into the drive shafts in the vehicle. Don't know where to put the batteries. Don't know how to cool it. Don't know how to make it safe. So could someone be excited for that at this point? Maybe. But I think that there's too many things in their way that people haven't, and I'm not going to say spoon fed, but, you know, made more avenues, right? Like when you think about how to do a K swap in a Civic, there is 1 million posts online about that. How do I do a Tesla swap, you know, a Model 3 performance swap in an NSX?
Yeah.
No one knows. Where am I going to mount batteries, right? Like, it's just, we're not there yet. We're getting closer all the time. For sure, we're getting closer all the time, but we're not there yet. So I think it's hard for people to be excited on something that they can't fully grasp yet.
Yeah, it makes sense. But I guess where I think it's so interesting is that AEM, I believe, and I keep going back to AEM because I think that the first ones, and I could be wrong, I could be unresearched in this area. I think they're the first real solid tuning company that has gone from, you know, the ICE situation to the EV side and understands the complexity of all of it. I think they're the first ones really putting out a lot of information and starting to generate a pathway of, hey, don't freak out. Tuning is still here and it still will be, but this is how we're going to go forward. They're painting the picture. Like, their video, they're starting with the video that basically says, hey,
yeah,
we know you think it's complicated. Let me tell you how electric vehicles work. And they give you the whole map. So they're starting to educate about how this stuff works so that you can start to hypothesize how you could generate, you know, repower a vehicle. And then comes the other area where they're now putting out components to allow you to make the hard connections that you'll need to. Because the one thing that I believe, you know, we talk about things like, you know, getting drivetrain to hook up to electric motors and, you know, different things like that. Those are mechanical aspects, right? Like, if they solve the electrical part, if they solve the controlling part, we're now talking about mechanical aspects, which is something that as a racer, you have to do, and you have done forever and ever.
Yep.
Yeah. So
the only thing is I think that depending on how OEM of a system, you're using will depend on how complicated or not complicated that has to be.
Yeah.
And I've known Sasha Anise for a long time, raced against him in Canada and the US and everything like that. And he has been very, you know, early to the ball game with all this stuff, with his company of Mountain Pass Performance and with his hybrid 350Z. And before that, his Lotus Evora that he Tesla swapped as well. And I think he used like a BMW battery pack or something like that for it. So I've followed along with Speed Academy and everything like that with, you know, they've always followed along with what he's been doing. And I look at how complicated, you know, he's like Canada's Motec dealer and stuff like that. He's very, very smart electrically. And I look at still how complicated his 350Z was when it was, when he did the hybrid, you know, modifications to that vehicle. I think,
oh, yeah,
you know, it was one of the first privateer hybrid race cars in the world. And I think it's amazing what AEM are doing. And I think that it's going to help bridge that gap more. But I look at all the things that he did, like he has a light on that car. And if the light, I believe if the light is on, you can't touch the car. Because like if you've been in a crash or something like that, if this light is on, don't touch the car, because you could get electrocuted touching the car, because it's like 800 volts, right? Well, I don't want to touch 800 volts. You're done for.
James, it's not the volts that will get you. It's the amps.
You don't need very many. If you got 800 volts, you need a whole lot less amps. But yeah, just stuff like that. So I think the more that companies like AEM come out and make this easier,
yeah,
the more people that do it, the more it becomes easier as a group, and the more people will do it. And it's just kind of a vicious cycle when it comes to that. And I just feel like we're still, you know, when you're trying, it seems like if you're putting a full kind of unit from one car into another, it's a little bit more complicated. He was doing a very sophisticated hybrid system in that car, more of a motorsports grade hybrid system.
Yeah.
And it seemed quite complicated. So I think that, you know, it's just with anything. The first few people that did K-swaps back in 2002 in Integras and Civics, that was like, whoa, how did you do that? You can't run an OBD1 ECU on that. Like,
yeah, okay. But we're not going to be naive to say that the K-swap was even remotely the same as a hybrid swap.
I know. Yeah, the more information is out there and it just kind of snowballs. And I think that people are less afraid of it when they go to a meet and see, oh, well, that guy did that already. And I think that this is a thing. I just think our snowball is very, very tiny right now. But, you know, it could go full avalanche pretty quickly, depending on what the EPA do.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me is that I think about this very, you know, this in a very watered down, extremely watered down situation has happened to us before. For example, like I was in the generation, and I think you are as well, where when we started racing, there was only these very primitive piggyback controllers, and some of them were the most hack systems ever. I mean, I think about math controllers where you basically were adjusting little dials that essentially would fool how much hertz the mass airflow sensor would see as a way of controlling fuel. Like, we all know that's not good. Like, that doesn't, you know, so.
My first car was a 1997 Mazda MX-6.
Okay.
An Apex I SAFC.
That's right. Yeah. Like,
just pressing those buttons, baby.
Like, I was, like, I remember the day that I went from, in my Eclipse, I remember the day that I went from 550s to 650s, and then I ended up changing to 720s. And as soon as I hit 720s, I was like, well, what am I gonna do now? Because the AFC only controlled, I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was like only up to 40% fuel reduction. Like, you got to a point where the injectors were so much larger than the amount of fuel it can pull. So it was like, all right, well, what else can we do? So we started taking out the honeycombs and the mass, because we realized that would create a lean out situation. And then all of a sudden we were implementing MAF translators that GM guys were using into the car to be able to supplement the AFC so that you can get the extra percentage out of the car by tricking the mass. So I was right at the point where then all of a sudden, and I hate to bring them up again, but like AEM really came to the market. You know, before that it was all Motecs and really big dollar stuff that you, one, couldn't probably afford, and two, if you got your hands on it, you wouldn't know what to do with it. Like, it was just too primitive. You needed to know how to do it.
I will say there was some pretty early Haltex back in the day there too.
Right. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like you say, they just weren't out there because people were afraid. How am I going to wire that thing in?
Right.
How would I ever do that?
Right.
You know, I can wire these 8 wires to this AFC though.
Right. And also in that era, there was another thing, which was electronic fuel injecting tuners, electric, EFI guys, they were not as prevalent as they are today because the support wasn't there. So like you had a lot of guys that you could bring to your car to a dyno that could take, a carburetor and tune your car that way, but you didn't have a carburetor. So you had to find the guy that knew how to tune Haltech, knew how to tune Motec in those early stages. And then something incredible happened was, companies like AEM and Haltech, they started to improve their user interfaces to make it so that you could at least upload a base map and get going. You could take these sensors, put them into your car, wire them to extra pins on the ECU or existing wiring in the car, and you could get them within range so that the ECU, the plug-and-play ECU, could figure out how to interpret them, and your car would start to be able to interact with this ECU. This is like big stuff. Like the going to that plug-and-play unit changes the game because it takes the guesswork out of custom wiring harnesses and universal applications. So
for sure.
So I think you're going to start to see that on existing electric cars, right? It's not going to be too long before there's a very simple plug-and-play system that's going to allow you to take your Model 3 and plug in, and all of a sudden you can change power settings, change this, change that, etc. It's not going to be long before we have that with, Chevy Volts and, I don't want to say Rivians, but you know what I mean? It's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure.
And the companies that do that stuff, those cars will, let's say, as they find their way to the track, they'll come in a very plug-and-play situation like, you can get access to now when you grab a Link ECU and it works for your, like it plugs into your 350Z, no problem. And you take that Link ECU and then you can go to a Link tuner, or, if you feel so confident that you can go in there and manipulate some of the tables, you can adjust some things. But there's going to be this other realm, which is, I don't have a Tesla, and I spent a lot of time developing this platform, this, my Mustang, my EK, my whatever it may be, your Evo. And I don't want to lose that development, but I do need to repower it. There's going to be that gap that's going to exist.
I think there's so much potential, in that type of powertrain. I think that there's, just their power delivery. And when we see some of the lap times, for example, at Toronto Motorsports Park, I keep on going back to Sasha, but he's one of the guys that I know that's been involved with this quite a bit. They built a Plaid, a Model S Plaid for some guys. I forget their names. But they did one lap of America competition with it this year, which is pretty amazing that they were able to drive to a different track every day, still get their charge and still, kind of keep on going. It shows how much things are evolving. But I don't know if you probably follow a little bit of the TMP stuff, but, anything at TMP sub 16 or 17 or anything like that, pretty quick car, right? For example, I drove a Supra there the other day, friend Supra. And I did a 15.7 in it on like a 200 treadwear tire. It had a bigger turbo, like a new, like a, Mark V. Made 550 wheel, had all the usual things. Did a 115.7. 200 treadwear tire. When they were testing that Plaid for One Lap of America this year, splitter wing, suspension, brakes, messing with how the power is delivered so it doesn't overheat the batteries and stuff like that. But with a 300 treadwear tire on it, I think it was like the Pilot Sport 4S or something like that. They're, you know, they're kind of, they're the best of the 300 treadwear game because they were afraid that they were going to burn up the 200s too fast because of the weight of the car.
Right.
That car, like, second shakedown went a 114.8 at TMP. It weighs 5,000 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, these are mind-blowing things.
Like, as soon as that was posted online, I messaged Sasha right away, and I was like, how fast does this go on a sticky tire?
Right.
Like, does that 5,000-pound car go mid-13s or high 12s?
Yeah.
On a sticky tire? Like, yeah. That's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen is we're going to go through these stages, right, where a lot of electric vehicles, let's say these electric vehicles start getting more prevalent. We're going to get to a point where there's enough of them competing that they now become a dominant force because of how much power they can make and how quickly they can make power. And then we're going to come to a point where these cars are going to make so much power equivalent that they're going to not be able to break and make power within the current realm of tires. Right. And these cars are going to get so fast that people are going to have to step in and they're going to say, hold on, wait a second. These cars are going too fast. We got to slow them down. Right. Like we're about to enter into an evolution of how much power and how fast you can make that power will be less of a concern more than ever. They're going to get through this point and then they're going to have to come back to figure out how to limit and put in these new, templates to be able to try to even the playing field for vehicles in general. Like we're really getting into a time period where we're going to look back and say, oh my God, that was the invention of the television. That was the invention of the internet.
The problem is those cars are already still so heavy. What do you even do to them to try to
get the weight out,
scale them back? They're so fast.
So
still such a heavy weight. I don't even know what you do to them. Typically you take down power or add weight. Well, they've added, you know, that Plaid weighs 1500 pounds more than that Super I drove.
Yeah.
On a harder tire and it's still faster.
Right. Well, so the first thing you have to do if you buy a Plaid is you have to change the steering wheel, right?
Yep. They put because, a Model 3 steering wheel on that car.
Because this yoke doesn't do anything. but then you get through that. No, listen, I agree with you, but I think, listen, battery technology will get better.
Yeah.
And with the battery technology improvements, you're going to start to see lighter weight. I also suspect that depending on the type of racing you're going to do, some of these cars will be more purpose-built in using certain battery setups that won't increase the weight more than they need to.
Well, that's what I was just wanting to say that is, you know, I recently bought a battery powered lawnmower for my house.
Congratulations, man.
Yes, it's awesome. I'm really enjoying it.
Right.
But I have a very small yard.
Yeah.
So I bought the lawnmower battery combination that had just enough charge and, you know, a little bit extra to cut my lawn.
Right.
There's like $800 ones. I bought a $375 one.
Yeah. Right?
Because I was like, it has 48 minutes of charge. Takes me about a half an hour to cut my grass. There it Perfect. Is. That's I'm it. In.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be the really neat thing. Like when you say about, you know, how is electric relating to time attack? Well, if you've got a car that you figure you want it to make about 500 horsepower and you need X amount of battery to do 3 flyers in a row, then that's how much battery you're going to put in. You're not going to put that Plaid battery in that can haul that 5,000-pound car to do potentially 25 flyers in a row or something like that, right? Or, you know, enough battery to drive to the track it for a little bit, and drive it home again. If it's a purpose-built track car, let's give it 7 minutes of charge.
Yeah.
Well, now all of a sudden, you know, I joke with that NSX. I really like NSXs.
The new you were talking about new ones, or are we talking about the older ones?
No, like first gen NSX.
Okay, I'm with
that
you.
That car is so light. Those cars are so light. They're not that light from the factory. They're pretty light from the factory. But if you want to strip one out, people have those cars they're competing with at 2,100, 2,200 pounds.
Like, which is light as a amazing.
Civic. Yes, for what those cars are. My friend Amir that races in Global Time Attack with his purple one, I don't know if you've ever seen his before, but it's just an absolute beautiful car. And it's like, you know, splitter wing, 18 by 12, 18 by 11, the whole nine yards, and it weighs like 2,300 and change.
Yeah.
Turbo K, you know, all the safety equipment, full cage and everything like that, and it's still so light. So I think about that. I take that and I use like a Model 3 powertrain, the Performance One, two-wheel drive, and I put just enough charge in that car that it can do 10 minutes of, you know, driving.
Yeah.
And one of these newer style battery packs that has like 10 minutes of good charge before it falls off, right? Yeah. I think the Plaid batteries are different than the Model 3 batteries.
Right.
And I think, how fast is an NSX that delivers power like a Plaid, but weighs, I don't know, maybe 3,200. Just putting it out there. Say it weighs 3,200 pounds.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's crazy when you start to think about the realm of possibility, which to guys like us, as much as we like, I don't want to lose my internal combustion cars. Like I love those cars. Like
I love them too.
Yeah. When I say I love those cars, like, I mean, I love those cars. So I want a pathway forward where I can still choose to keep my car, use my car, etc. But there is this other level of me that has always been like, I love building cars, if not equal to or a little bit more than driving them. Like, I just love building cars. And part of that building part is the challenge of it, is the thinking, working, making, you know. So I think, like, it is exciting to me to a certain degree of thinking about the next challenges forward with something I've never done before. I mean, I'm not saying that's for everybody. I'm just saying that personally, you know?
And my friend Grant, I just saw him, a message came up from him saying about how the size of the battery depends on the amp. So if you really wanted a lot of power, then you can't actually go to a very small battery. So
right.
There's more to it there than understand. But as you know, I got to give Grant credit. He's up on that stuff all the time. But
right.
Maybe as battery technology changes or something like that,
yes. You
know, maybe we can get to the point of a battery where it can deliver a lot of power for a short amount of time without weighing a ton.
Yeah. No,
literally a ton.
I totally agree with you. And the last thing I want to put in here for people, and this is for people that may be watching, because this happened to me when I did a podcast a long time ago on the RPM Act. And surprisingly, because it was a searchable topic, I got a lot of people that commented on it that essentially said you know, like they were coming from like environmental groups to like hate on me in the comments, which is cool. Right. Like we appreciate all comments, including the hateful ones. One thing that I will say is please understand with electric vehicles, there are states like right now in California and Texas and different things like that, that don't have infrastructure or grid to be able to sustain just powering their homes. They have to do rolling blackouts to control it. Like there are situations where developing lithium batteries is far more caustic in many situations than some of the other natural resources. And I'm not trying to compare them or take a side. I'm just saying people should understand that electric vehicles are maybe not the answer that they think they are. And I do believe that there's a path forward that's in between them that people aren't really acknowledging. I think that there's a big business element that people haven't been given thought to that is in the background, that we're pushing these electric vehicles just so hard and fast. We're not ready there. If everybody got an electric vehicle right now, we would all be like, how do we get to work tomorrow? Because there's not enough charging stations. There's not enough places. Like you could charge at home in off hours, but like, that's only assuming that the grid's there to support you. When everybody else has one, you know, have they made that leap there? Have they gotten there yet? So I'm just putting some of these questions out there so people understand, like, this is not, if everybody kind of goes to electric in the next couple of years, we're going to have some issues that are going to start to pop up and people are going to go, I don't understand. Why didn't we think about that before? There's companies trying to deal with the infrastructure now. There's still going to be at a loss. It's very expensive. It's very hard technology. This is like trying to like think about it like in the beginning. So Henry Ford rolls a car off the line and then says, hey, you could drive this car. And people are like, well, what do you use to power it? And he says, gasoline. And they're like, well, where are these stations? And they're like, we don't have any. Like,
yeah
you know what I mean? Like exactly same thing. So just keep this all crap in mind if you're hating on me in the comments about, you know, certain things. And,
you know, whatever.
I have one more thing to talk about that in real world stuff, not to do with racing at all.
Yes.
The Ford F-150 Lightning getting so much attention right now, right? Very cool in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Why does no one have a plug-in pickup truck, full-size pickup truck that has 60 miles of range of electric to drive to work and back every day to cut out a lot of that expenses of your, a lot of your, you know, harsh in-town driving, you know, the worst possible mileage you can get, and then still has some sort of maybe a less powerful than normal because the electric could help it go up the hills. But why does that F-150 not have a naturally aspirated 3.5 liter V6 with the electric assist so you can, you know, use electric every single day and you can still go more than how, I don't know, how far does that new F-150 Lightning go towing? In the wintertime when it's 20 below
Right, and it's right in that Rivian ballpark. I think they say, like, hey, look, the trucks will get around 300 miles per charge. If you're towing something with X amount of capacity, they're saying that that will drop roughly in half to 60%. So you figure now your range obviously goes down. But more so than anything else, like you just said, the issue to me is that there was a path, and this is what I meant by, like, hey, there, I believe that there's a real path forward here that everybody's ignoring, which is what you're saying. Like, there's hybrid situations that could drastically accomplish the same emission standards that people are hoping for in a much faster way, still allowing infrastructure to get built while we do it in a real realm. There's things like renewable, you know, the CRG, the you know, the renewable natural gas that's there. There's hydrogen things. There's so many different options that we could utilize pieces of to accomplish a goal much faster than trying to throw electric vehicles all out there, tell them it's the only way forward, and then try to figure out the infrastructure stuff later. So that was exactly my point, and I agree with you 1,000%.
Absolutely.
So listen, I'm going to let you go because we've exhausted enough of your time. I just wanted, you know, I saw AEM putting this stuff out. I think they're doing a fantastic job. They're doing exactly what I hope a lot of other companies are going to do. Not abandon where they're at, but add where they're going. And I think that it helps in the industry like us. It helps motorsports stay intact when, as these things come, if the powers that be put a kibosh on certain things, there's still a path for motorsports to continue going forward.
Yeah, and I think it made sense to have the conversation with you because AEM specifically did target motorsports, and it was like, you know what, why not have a conversation with someone in motorsports?
Right, like, is it viable? Yeah. And I think, you know, we kind of ran through that, and I think that's just the conversation I wanted to exist out there, you know?
And I wasn't trying to take anything away from AEM earlier that absolutely, it's not that easy just yet.
Yeah.
Because it takes a company like that with what they are doing right now.
Absolutely.
To have the avenue to make it easy.
Yep.
I'm totally not trying to, you know,
do anything to, I agree,
make it look down. It's just one step. And I think this is the first step. I think there's still a lot of steps.
Yeah.
But it takes someone to make the first step. It takes someone, you know, like a Hasport, to make this the engine mounts to put the Model 3 in the front of the EG7.
Right. And at first the engine mounts are welded, but then all of a sudden they're beautiful CNC machine, the magicry that Brian knows how to do with those machines, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, James, thanks for coming on and helping us tackle this long question. And remember, if you guys have any hate mail, send it to James Houghton. He's located in Canada.
And if you guys are excited about 18 by 12 wheels,
yeah,
you can also say the thank you mail because
right,
I might have helped that along
that's,
a little
that's
bit.
Exactly right. No, that's 100% the case. So, yeah, if you don't know, check out the pictures of James Houghton's TSX. It's on 18 by 12s, baby.
Oh, look at that.
The heliograms in the wild.
We're actually looking
right
at
there.
It right now.
This look is what I'm saying.
Nice.
Yeah. We got pictures. It's queued up. It's ready to go. Heliograms are out there on the street, 18 by 12s. Don't sleep on it.
So I'll take the hate mail and the thank mail. I'm up for all of the mail.
That's right. But you can address his thank you mail to us here in New York. And what we'll do is we'll read it for him and send the hate mail up there to Canada. All right, James, we'll
let you
go.
So
thanks so much, man.
Appreciate it, James.
So thanks, listen, I mean, so this was a... Oh, that's a fun one. I like James. I, you know, I, I think for me, I'm scared.
Yeah.
Of as a car enthusiast, I'm scared of being of losing the ability to do something that has been integrated and has basically been a part of my life.
Well, so, and that's why, you know, obviously if you're watching, you saw that I was just listening and I really didn't say much. Reason why is because I'm not the most mechanically inclined.
Yeah,
I'm
but that doesn't matter.
But, you know, from assessing the situation and knowing what it is, I understand. At the end of the day, like, it's the beginning of a new venture. The one thing that I will say is, as a car enthusiast, you know, you kind of get to that point where I notice that a lot of car enthusiasts like to pull things apart and put them back together. So this is one of those situations where you kind of get to do that. It's a new thing. It's a new, so people like Scott who are getting excited for these things, well, others are just fearful.
Yeah, but you know? But look, I say excitement with
yes,
with,
I know what you
with
mean.
An amount of brevity, yeah. Right? Like I'm excited in the sense that I now think that AEM had, you know, I had something in my head for a long time about how I thought electric vehicles would be utilized in motorsport and then motorsport would continue.
Yeah.
I'm now excited that I truly see that the pathway will exist and will continue to exist with companies like Haltech and AEM and all these other companies that are going to come to the party and make, you know, battery management systems and tuning software for electric vehicles. Now, they'll also give us a pathway forward on how to convert existing vehicles if you want to use existing platforms.
Yes,
but
that's dope.
But I also say it with a lot of, you know, with some sadness, a lot of fear.
Well, it's the nostalgia thing.
Well, it's not just the nostalgia thing. Like, these are, here's the thing. I'm not upset about electric vehicles coming into play. I'm not upset that they can be used. I'm upset with the fact or the thought that everything I've known to this point about automotive tuning and different things like that could go away.
Yeah.
I could be told because
because,
you know, this vehicle is modified or that vehicle, you can't use it anymore unless you put it back to stock. Yeah. I don't even know how I would do that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm fine if they say I have to modify my vehicle to comply with a certain standard. I'm fine if they tell me, and I'm not saying I love it. Like, I don't want to spend any more money or change things. But I'm saying, like, I can deal with, you hear weird things?
I think he's still there. That's
oh, is he? Anyhow, I'm fine with the fact that, like, if we run into a situation where they say to me, hey, you know, your car came off the line with this emissions. It's got to remain at these emissions. We don't care how you do it, but it's got to be here.
Yeah.
Because at least it's something that I think I can get done.
Mm.
You're not telling me I can't have it the way it is. You're just telling me I can't do this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyhow, that's enough. Yeah. That's enough.
I get it.
You know, listen. Anyhow, if you're here still, throw the thumbs up. Give us a like. Comment below. Super interested to see what everybody has to say about these electric vehicles, electric tuning platforms, and where this will go in as far as motorsports. So throw all that information down below.
Agreed.
Shout out to James Houghton, who again joined us for this good conversation. I think it's a topic that we'll probably have multiple times throughout the next year or two.
I agree.
And that's it. Make sure you stay tuned for Friday when we're going to be dropping a piece of content. I think it's a five things about the five dealer options that are the absolute worst when you buy a new car.
Yep.
So if you're buying a new car, make sure you check that out. Also, last Friday we had to walk around with Kelsey Rawlings.
Kelly, yeah.
I said Kelsey.
No,
he's gonna make it bad. He's gonna make it bad. So, with Kelsey Rawlings, and we did a walk around of her car. She's an Illuminator, which is the newer Mustang engine in an S chassis. She has for a few years. It's an interesting build. Check it out. And don't forget that we go live before the podcast every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, where we go live on Facebook and Instagram. We answer your questions. That's pretty much it. We will be back here next Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Take care of yourself. Do cool car things. Post comments down below. Make sure you subscribe. I think we covered it all. We'll catch you next week.
Peace.